Public Works Program, I think, have been successful in achieving their short-term goals of increasing employment and earnings. However, the majority of the programs have not been successful in achieving their persistent post-program impacts on earnings and consumption, unless, of course, accompanied by some sort of productive investment. Most importantly, these programs don't appear to be cost-effective.
Welcome to Vox Dev Talks. My name is Tim Phillips. We see large-scale public works programs everywhere. We recently reported on one from the Central African Republic, but how effective are they at achieving their goals? Do they provide a way for participants to change their lives and escape poverty, or is it just a short-term extra income? Eric Mvukiyehi of Duke and Subamani of Fordham are two of a team of researchers that have been comparing the outcomes of recent programs, and they join me now. Eric, hello. Welcome to Vox Dev Talks.
Thank you, Tim. Pleasure to be with you.
And Subo, welcome as well.
Hi, Tim. Thank you for having us here.
Eric, give me some context, first of all. Why do we have public works programs at all?
Thank you, Tim. First of all, let me acknowledge our co-authors, including Patrick Premond, whose study of the public works program in Côte d'Ivoire included in this review was also featured on this podcast a while back. Public works programs are typically implemented during economic downturns and periods of high unemployment and job scarcity. Conceptually, we can think of three key reasons, which translate into three broad categories of objectives of these programs. First, they serve as temporary social safety net by providing one-off consumption and income smoothing in response to a large general shock, for example, macroeconomic crisis such as the Great Depression in Argentina in the late 1990s and early 2000s, or agroclimatic crises such as drought, flooding, cyclone in different parts of the world. Second, public works programs serve as a permanent poverty alleviation or insurance instrument by providing employment guarantee, right to work policy to smooth intra-seasonal income variation. Examples include India's flagship National Rural Employment Guarantee Act and Ethiopia's productive safety net programs, and by providing also the ability to smooth consumption and to prevent households from taking costly actions as a response to the shock. Third, and finally, public works programs serve as a crisis response in post-conflict and fragile settings by providing post-conflict recovery, for example, help generate income and employment to jumpstart the local economy on a demand side, increase local cohesion and trust in a conflict aftermath, and by providing also to high-risk groups such as ex-combatants and adult youth, employment in an effort to reduce, of course, recidivism and violence. So those are the three broad reasons why we undertake these public works in the first place.
And what are the attributes, the aspects that they have in common that sort of defines them as public works programs?
These programs, especially the ones we studied here, varied widely on key program features, including length of employment, targeting, wage rates, type of work, and so forth. However, they all share two key common features and are all based on randomized controlled trials, which makes it possible to conduct analysis, pulling the individual studies together as we did. The first feature is the provision of temporary employment opportunities to poor and vulnerable individuals and or households, such as the opportunity to work in the creation and maintenance of local infrastructure in exchange for a wage, providing recipients an opportunity to increase their income and consumption. The second common feature is the creation or rehabilitation of local infrastructures, which can benefit not only the workers participating in the programs, but potentially also the broader community, indirectly at least, in terms of better access to services and revitalization of the local economy. For example, the newly constructed roads in a program in rural areas can help connect farmers to agricultural markets and thus provide village residents with an opportunity to sell their products, regardless of whether or not they participated in a program.
You listed a lot of potential goals and outcomes for these public works programs. Does this variation in their goals mean that this is going to affect the scope of the program and the duration of the program as well?
Indeed. The goals of public works programs are tightly linked to their scope and duration. For one thing, duration of the program is a key design parameter. While duration is generally determined by program goals, it also typically needs to be adjusted to the situation on the ground. As described in a recent report by the Overseas Development Institute, programs of a short duration are appropriate instruments to provide a social safety net during periods of economic distress, while programs of a longer duration are more appropriate in situations of structural unemployment and chronic poverty. In the same vein, the broader the goals of a public works program, the wider the scope is likely to be. For example, public works designed to stabilize the economy in times of economic downturn are likely to be narrower in scope than those designed to alleviate poverty. The former type operates countercyclically by creating temporary jobs in times of economic distress while releasing workers in times of economic growth. The latter typically have additional components such as incentivized savings or vocational training to enhance their employability in the labor market and to bridge the gap with long-term sustained livelihoods.
Usually when we're talking about these programs on Vox Dev Talks, then at some point in the conversation, we compare them to the outcome for cash transfers, which would be another very ambitious large-scale plan that might also be used in situations of extreme poverty. But you point out in the paper that there isn't very much quantitative research that evaluates the impact of public works programs when we compare them to the outcomes of cash transfers. Why not?
Well, the issue of weak evidence base is not unique to public works programs.
Yeah.
For a while, as you know, Tim, donors were satisfied with outputs and outcomes as a measure of program success.
Mm.
It is only really in the last 15 years or so, and thanks in large part to growing demand from donors for more accountability and rigorous evidence for development programs in terms of more evidence of impact, that we've started to see a movement towards impact evidence. This strategic shift has led to more knowledge generation on many types of interventions, including cash transfers. With respect to public works programs, researchers have found innovative ways of rigorously evaluating them by focusing primarily on common features such as the provision of employment opportunities and local infrastructures. So there is slowly evidence building, but this is a general problem in the industry, not just of public works programs.
But in the situation that we're in now, where there is this demand for evidence, does this lack of a deep knowledge base about public works programs mean that perhaps they might not be employed in situations where they could be useful at the moment?
Well, public works programs are a commonly used instrument on a large scale, as we said. And so the issue is not so much about a lack of evidence leading to a lack of use of these instruments, but rather potentially overuse or inappropriate use because of lack of evidence.
Okay, super. Let's have a look at your project. And now that was to review the evidence from programs that have been run, that have completed, to try and extract the policy lessons from them. But as we've just been discussing with Eric, given the differences in timing and structure and scope and location, is it at all possible to be able to do that?
Yeah, that's a great question, Tim. And we hope that our review piece is able to do that. Especially, I think, for drawing policy lessons, we think it's very important to review all the evidence together and not focus on individual studies, especially since study-specific features, including timeline and measurement, are usually carefully thought out and designed for answering a specific research question in mind. Researchers normally have a very specific goal to achieve in a research project. And for instance, the study in Comoros can only measure the short-term effects of the public works opportunity as they collected data only when the program was offered. In contrast, the Cote d'Ivoire and Djibouti studies collect multiple rounds of data that allow them to comment on whether the short-run effects of the PWP program persist into the medium run. And some studies, like the one Eric and I have in rural DRC, collected really good data that offer some important explanations for why we might expect any impacts almost 12 months after the public works program ended.
Mm-hmm.
Hence, by pooling several studies together, we can really focus on the common dimensions. Also, by restricting ourselves to just experimental evaluations of public works programs, we're able to make a more clean apples-to-apples comparison at any given time or context. It's only when we combine all the internally valid studies together can we really see what are the systematic patterns that emerge that are more generalizable and hence relevant for policy. So in sum, you know, we do need all the individual studies because only if they exist can we rigorous and can we really use them for systematic reviews. But the point is that we need the individual studies that eventually we should follow up with a good systematic review that can collate the evidence which can be used to draw lessons for policy.
How many studies in the end could you compare? How many apples, I suppose?
Yeah. Well, not too many. We evaluated 11 public works experiments that were implemented across 9 countries, but only all but one study belongs to the sub-Saharan Africa and North Africa region. So we really need more experimental work that comes from other regions on this topic. So we have many experiments, but they're from one region mostly.
Eric, when you're making these comparisons, doing this evaluation, are you looking here for the impact on the macro variables, how good it was for the economy, or the impact on the people and the households involved?
All the studies we reviewed measured impacts at the micro level, by which we mean household level or individual level. Thus, we selected outcome variables that can be measured at these levels directly. We focus on 5 primary outcomes variables that are measured consistently across studies. These include individual employment and employment of other household members, earnings, household food consumption and expenditure, savings and assets. We also compare findings on 2 secondary outcomes, specifically psychological well-being and women's empowerment.
And considering what Suba was saying about the data restrictions, are you able to do this for a time after the program has finished, or is it just while the program is operating?
We investigate both to the extent possible. In our review, only 4 studies measured program impacts contemporaneously, meaning while the program was still running. Such effects are an important step in ascertaining whether the program is on the right track and provide implementers with the opportunity to do mid-course correction that might be warranted. The downside, of course, is that they do not provide a full picture of program impact since all potential effects may not have materialized yet, especially those such as employment that may require a longer time frame. All the studies in our review, except for Comoros and Laos, conducted at least 1 post-program follow-up survey to estimate impact after the program ended. However, there is substantial variation in the timing of the post-program follow-up survey. They range from 1 month after the program, such as the one study in Egypt or Sierra Leone, to 66 months, as in our Tunisia study. Post-program impact can also be measured more than once. 4 of the studies that we reviewed, including the Cote d'Ivoire one we mentioned earlier, fielded 2 follow-up surveys to examine the evolution of impact over time. While this is a costly endeavor, measuring program impact in more than 1 follow-up survey is critical to documenting whether and how program impact might be sustainable in the long run.
When I was talking to Artur about the program in CAR, one of the most striking things was just how oversubscribed it was, so that the places on the program had to be granted by lottery. How popular in general are public works programs?
We can say now that we have more evidence that it's relatively high in most studies. Take-up rates were above 90%. In studies such as the Djibouti, Cote d'Ivoire, and Ethiopia. The lowest take-up rates occurred in a handful of studies, so 40% in Egypt, 1 study in Egypt, and 56% in 1 study in the DRC.
Mm-hmm.
Generally speaking, however, the majority of participants who were offered the job opportunity took it. So those who did not took it were perhaps for a variety of reasons, which we get into in the paper.
So Suba, looking at these results then, how big was the impact on employment? Where is that effect largest?
In the short run, the effects on employment are almost 30 percentage points. And mm-hmm. these effects are pretty large in two countries, Comoros and Djibouti, because it's almost 2.5 times the control mean in these countries.
Yeah.
But they're primarily driven by the relatively low levels of employment observed in the control group. So people are mostly not working here. So only 10 to 20% of the control mean is employed in these countries. What is a little disappointing maybe that these short-run improvements all unfortunately fade away in the medium run.
Oh.
With an important caveat though, that in some studies where do we observe some positive effects, these are primarily due to investments in productive assets like land and livestock. So when we observe these effects in the medium run, then we're able to see why that is the case. But often the effects on employment can hide important crowding out effects. For instance, it depends upon what are these individuals already engaged in, what forms of employment. So if the new public works opportunity is just simply creating a substitution from your existing work, then depending on the nature and type of substitution, it may actually result in no impacts of the public works program.
Hmm.
So in the extreme, for instance, in Ethiopia, the public works opportunity just simply crowds out private sector employment. So people who are already engaged in private sector work, you just give up your private sector employment and start public work. So the net effect is zero. So overall, I think the devil is in the details to understand why we observe effects in some places, but not others. And I think, again, collating everything together helps us understand and design public works programs better in the future.
And is this translating into higher incomes where it is effective? And is that translating in turn into higher consumption?
Yeah, those are very important questions. And in the short run, again, the public works opportunity does increase monthly earnings by about $50, which is sizable, especially when we compare it to the control mean of $55. So that's huge. But once again, the effects don't sustain in the medium run.
Mm.
Unless, of course, I'm always going to bring this caveat that unless it's accompanied by investment in productive assets.
Yes.
And this caveat is really critical for understanding why the effects sustain into the medium run. The results on food consumption are only available for 7 of the 11 studies we reviewed, and we find no effects on consumption. We think this might be because that the earnings were just not large enough to increase food consumption in any meaningful way, but could also be due to some measurement issues, or that, you know, people just use their earnings to increase savings and assets, so then very little is left for consumption.
Yes. Now, if they do manage to increase their savings, they can invest in productive assets, then that can make the households more resilient, can't it? Can break that cycle of poverty. Is this something you looked for when you were comparing these studies?
Yes, absolutely. I think for all the medium run effects, any improvements in income is, and we essentially explore two possible channels, savings and asset accumulation, for facilitating these medium run impacts. And if households are able to put aside a part of their public works earnings towards savings or purchase of productive assets, then that could really help generate positive impacts on earnings. And we observe these channels in several countries. We observe them in Tunisia, rural DRC, and Cote d'Ivoire.
Eric, one thing that, again, in conversation with Arthur that we were talking about was the other goals for public works programs. You've mentioned some of these already in CAR. There was particularly an issue of trying to improve social cohesion. Is this something that your analysis gives any insight into?
Indeed, it does. As with many employment programs, public works programs that we reviewed are often presumed to have positive externalities on these non-material outcomes, so to speak, or at least outcomes of secondary order objectives, including antisocial behavior, social cohesion, as you mentioned in the case of the CAR study, psychological well-being, and so forth. These non-material outcomes are also presumed to serve as feedback loops that can further improve material outcomes downstream. The challenge, though, is that the theory of change linking public works programs to these non-material outcomes has not been well articulated. If anything, the literature typically suggests potential mechanisms that may point in opposite directions.
Oh.
Nevertheless, most of the studies that we reviewed in this paper collected data on a wide range of these non-material outcomes to provide a stronger evidence base. Our review focuses specifically on psychological well-being, among other outcomes, and we do find some evidence of improvement. However, the effect do not appear to be systematic across studies, possibly due to limitation in data and measurement consistency.
Another hugely important question, do these programs help to empower women who I believe are particularly vulnerable in many of these situations?
Yes. So 7 of the 11 studies we reviewed, including many in which we participated directly as investigators, measured impacts on women empowerment in the form of increased economic engagement or decision-making in the household. The measures varied across countries and tended to be relatively narrow. Only 3 studies find a positive increase, and that will be the study in Laos, one of the studies in Egypt, and the Tunisia study at 12-month mark. Overall, the evidence shows that public works program can improve women empowerment, but they do not do so systematically. While this may be in part due to limitation in measurement, as I mentioned, open questions remain on how to design public works programs to achieve sustained increase in this dimension, which is critical, especially in some countries such as in the Middle East, where gender issues are really at the forefront of the policy debates.
Can we say anything more general? In what ways public works programs are succeeding and perhaps in the ways they're not succeeding?
That's a great question, Tim. Public works program, I think, have been successful in achieving their short-term goals of increasing employment and earnings. However, the majority of the programs have not been successful in achieving their persistent post-program impacts on earnings and consumption, unless, of course, accompanied by some sort of productive investment. The programs have also not been able to achieve their complementary objectives around improving women's empowerment. We observe some improvements in psychological well-being and women's empowerment, but as Eric mentioned, it's not observed systematically. And most importantly, these programs don't appear to be cost-effective. And let me elaborate a little bit on this. The improvement in monthly earnings that we find during the short run is relatively low. On average, the earnings increase is only 46% of maximum potential program earnings. And if there are no foregone earnings, which means that if the earnings individuals have to give up to join the program is zero, then the impact on earnings should be at least as much as the maximum potential earnings. But because the effects are much lower than this, it points to the existence of really huge foregone earnings from participation, which really in turn limits the cost effectiveness of these public works programs. While we don't have precise details on program costs for most of these interventions, the fact that the earnings effect is still much smaller than the maximum possible earnings you can get from the program, even during exposure to the program, and these effects fade away completely in the medium run, really raises questions about the overall cost effectiveness of these programs. And of course, we're not even talking about all the administrative costs of the public works program and the infrastructure costs right now. I mean, even in terms of foregone earnings, it doesn't seem like it's going to be cost effective. So we really need better data again on program costs to undertake cost effective analysis more rigorously.
I assume that you have spent a lot of time with the data on the outcomes of these programs and sometimes some frustrating time, I guess. What outcomes from that have you discovered that perhaps we should be measuring better and could do a better job of measuring in future?
Yes, indeed. And I think that's the conclusion from every research that we can do a lot better on all fronts, including this one.
Yeah.
So I think the first is administrative data systems for these programs should be really improved so that research can make use of the non-survey data that would allow them to track take-up, employment, earnings during the public works program. I mean, somebody has fiduciary responsibility for these things, so it just seems a matter of figuring out how to track these things. We still don't know how well these programs are utilized, such as number of days worked on the public works project, and it's really a pity that, you know, this data exists somewhere and we just don't have access to it. Mm. Second, we need to measure the outcomes much more frequently, given the volatility of labor markets in low and middle income countries. And consistent measurement is also key here. I think we as economists and development economists in particular are really good at measuring labor market outcomes and consumption expenditure. It's much more standardized. We know what's the best recall period and so on to measure these things. But there's quite a bit of variation when it comes to measuring women's empowerment and psychological well-being, which again can benefit from some standardization and rigorous work. We also need more researchers to collect data and explain on the mechanisms to explain why we observe impacts in certain places, but not in other contexts. For example, you know, we need data on assets, work experience, skills, savings, self-employment that facilitate the post-program impact on employment and earnings? I mean, during the program, it's clear you're getting money from the public works. But post-program, you know, what is the reason that you're able to increase your earnings and consumption? So I think we can do better on a lot of fronts.
As you said, the comparisons you were able to do focus on a narrow range of countries, both economically and geographically. Can we draw any conclusions about the potential success or the applicability of public works programs in a broader context?
I think the short-term findings might replicate really well in settings where we face high rates of underemployment and especially unemployment. I would in fact even speculate that in the short run, the impacts would be even higher in areas where there's very high levels of unemployment, because most of our large effects that I mentioned earlier on employment really come from studies where people have very low levels of employment to start with. But I would like to add a caveat that these impacts might not replicate well in settings where youth in urban areas, for instance, youth in urban areas, where aspirations for white-collar jobs and school completion rates may prevent young people from participating in public works opportunities. Similarly, these findings may also not hold in settings where manual labor is really stigmatized because it's considered a low-class occupation. And lastly, I don't think we can expect the short-run effects to necessarily persist in the future unless the participants can use these earnings to accumulate either physical capital or human capital. That translates into long-term impacts.
Thank you, Subha, and thank you, Eric.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tim. It was a pleasure to be with you and Subha.
The paper's called, Do Public Works Programs Have Sustained Impacts? A meta-analysis of experimental studies from low- and middle-income countries. And the authors, oh, so many of them, Anshel Bagga, Marcus Holmland, Nosheen Khan, Subhamani, Eric Mvukiyehi, and Patrick Premont. This has been a Vox Dev Talk. The best way to make sure you don't miss an episode is to subscribe. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts from. And our past episodes, as always, are at voxdev.org, where you will find articles about the papers we feature.